Hello, my friends, and welcome to the Deeper Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Paul White. It is the 18th day of September, and I want to thank you for joining me on our daily podcast. This is the Saturday edition. On Saturdays, I like to introduce you to the Sunday sermon, and the one that we're going to air for you tomorrow is a little bit different in that this was the message I was going to preach when we were in Mobile, Alabama last month, but we had Hurricane Ida come raging across the Gulf, and we canceled the remainder of the conference after the Saturday night service. That means I only preached one sermon instead of two, and I had a collection. I was going to do back-to-back sermons. We aired that first sermon last week. It was called The Symphony of the Scriptures. The sermon we were going to preach the next day is the one that I'm going to air for you tomorrow, because I sat down this past week and I recorded the message. But it's a little different in that I directed it to my audience, talked to the audience a little bit about what's going on in our lives, gave a little family update, and then went into the sermon and shared it much, much differently than it would have been, say, from a pulpit. But I think you're going to enjoy it. This is a message titled The Song of the New Covenant. This is the follow-up to the Symphony of the Scriptures. We go from the symphony to the song. And I'll save the scripture details for you watching or listening, but I'll just give you the basic of it. The basics of it is that just as there's a symphony, an undercurrent, a melodic sound to what the Bible's trying to say, the New Testament has a song as well, what I think is a very specific song. And anything outside of that song should be considered dissonance at worst, harmony at best, but there's a real melody that the New Covenant is trying to sing. And I show a comparison between the song, what I call the Song of America, and the inconsistencies in the developers of that song, and we contrast that to the Song of the New Covenant and the inconsistencies in the developer of that song. Anyhow, that's as far as I'll go. I think you're going to really enjoy the Song of the New Covenant, and I hope you'll check it out, if nothing else, for the first several minutes of it, where we let you in on what's going on in our life, in our ministry, and hopefully that will be a blessing to you. This will be available wherever you're listening to this podcast. You'll be able to get the audio version of the Song of the New Covenant. And if you prefer video, we have the video version with all the text on the screen. That's available at our YouTube page, PWM, or of course at paulwhiteministries.com. Okay, I have been in this Cain and Abel story and trying to come at it from angles I have not wrestled out before. I'm not trying to beat a topic to death, and I'm not trying to just throw in anything I see. I'm certainly not stirrer of controversy or trying to jump out here on the fringes of theology. But I've been trying to really wrap my mind around some of these concepts that I thought I had figured out. And I think over the next couple of days, what we're going to get into in regards to the blood that was shed by Abel and how it cries out, I think that these next few days will be particularly interesting for you, the audience, and certainly for me as I wrestle out some of these concepts. Let's start with the basic text for today, Genesis chapter 4, verse 10, and this is right after, "Am I my brother's keeper?" And I told you the answer is always an unequivocal yes. In fact, in my Bible, I all caps with three exclamation points the word yes after Cain's question, "Am I my brother's keeper?" But verse 10, God says to Cain, "What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground." And I want, first of all, for you to notice that God almost always has conversation with whoever he's talking to in the book of Genesis. And if you'll notice, most of the Bible is this way. whomever God is speaking to, he opens with a question. He almost always opens with a question. And the reason for that, again, is not because God is ignorant or uninformed or trying to figure it out as he goes. The question is not for God, the question is for us, so that we will ask ourselves the same question and then earnestly contend with that answer. What have you done is followed on the back of, why are you angry? Remember, this was the question God originally asked Cain. Why are you angry? Why is your countenance fallen? Cain didn't deal with that question. Your refusal, my refusal, to deal with the question of our own emotions will lead to an action we can't take back. Where we don't deal with our own emotions, our emotions will deal with us. And then those emotions take us down a road that there's no coming back from. And what Cain does to Abel, there's blatantly no coming back from. You don't come back from murder. I don't mean you're not redeemable. I don't mean you're not justifiable, and I don't mean that you're not forgivable. But you don't come back from it. You got to be recreated out of it. You don't take a step back, well, I murdered, but let's see if we can fix it. And so it seems to be why we get this example in the text, from the progression of why are you angry to what have you done. You're supposed to own the first one so you never get asked the second one. And where you don't own the first one, why are you angry, you'll end up being forced to answer the second one, which is, what have you done? And here's the beauty of where the New Testament goes. Even if the answer to what have you done is, I killed someone, you're still redeemable. I mean, you can still, I don't mean you won't go to prison. I mean, if we're going to use this as an actual illustration, okay, you kill someone. It doesn't mean you're not going to go pay the price for that, that you're not going to ultimately be punished severely, permanently. But it does mean that even though all that natural stuff's going to have consequences of what you've done, it doesn't mean you can't be forgiven. It doesn't mean that you can't be a new creation. It doesn't mean you can't live in peace. It doesn't mean you can't have the understand the righteousness of God. All of those things are accomplished in who Christ is. Christ becomes the centerpiece of our redemption in this story, not us looking at what we've done and then trying to fix it, because the illustration here is there's no fixing the killing of Abel. Okay, if the story ended right here, it would be, oh my gosh, what a disaster. Your emotions led to a murder. There's no coming back from a murder. What we know, of course, is that the story does not end here. So though the question is, what have you done? God, of course, knows what he's done. And God answers the question for him. The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. That becomes the source of so much of what ends up happening in the Bible, is the fact that Abel's blood has hit the earth and an entirely new system has started. This is the system of man. And tomorrow on the podcast, I want to talk about the system of man, the system of Cain, and I want to talk about how this journey has helped me to realize something that I never realized before, something that I think I got wrong, but I'm ever growing, willing to say, hey, I've been wrong, because I really don't want to live in a place of wrong. And so we're going to work on some of that tomorrow. I'll see you then. God bless.